This is an audio archive of the CrossFit Live webcast from June the 5th, 2005. The following is the complete program featuring Coach Rob Wolf on the subject of nutrition and its effect on human performance. For easier file download and management, this program is also available in two segments. Please see the archive page of CrossFitLive.com to download these segments separately.
It's the voice of elite fitness, CrossFit Live. Now, your host, Dave Young.
This edition of CrossFit Live will focus on the subject of performance and nutrition. Or probably a little more eloquently put, nutrition and its effect on human performance. And the guest on this edition of CrossFit Live is Rob Wolf of CrossFit NorCal, someone that is... Well, probably pretty familiar to a lot of you that stalk the message board. Just for those of you out there that might not be familiar with Rob, let me just take an opportunity to present a little bit of a bio on Rob, and we'll ask him to add to it in just a little bit. Rob Wolf is a strength and conditioning coach and founder, as a matter of fact, of CrossFit NorCal. Rob has the CrossFit coaching level certificate, which of course is awarded to only a handful of people. And how many exactly is a handful? I don't know, but it sounds like very few. Rob earned his BS in biochemistry and worked as a research biochemist for 5 years, and that would include some work in CV lipid metabolism research at the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. It's pretty amazing I can even say CV lipid metabolism research, let alone do it. Rob currently works at Ridge Physical Therapy and Wellness Center, Paradise, California, and uses CrossFit methodology, of course he does, and in what is probably a rather unique integrated approach to rehabilitation, and probably raises a few eyebrows around the rehab clinic. I'm pretty sure about that. Nutrition, of course, is clearly one of the hottest sections of the CrossFit message board. I'm sure you've noticed Rob contributes extensively in that area of the message board, but the dynamic here is a little bit different, which is of course exactly why we're doing this program. The real-time interaction tends to bring out a little more candid side of people and some information that might be a little too detailed to type into a message board. So we think the opportunity is unique here, and would love for you to be a part of it. Thank you all for listening to us tonight. We appreciate you logging into CrossFit Live. This is Dave Young, and so here now from Chico, California, is Rob Wolf. Good evening, partner.
Hey, Dave. How you doing?
I am well, and it is quite a pleasure to have you on the show, I must say. I think you've been probably listening to the programs we've had so far. We've done a couple with Coach Glassman, and we have had Mike Bergner on talking about O-lifting, and I wanted to get around to nutrition, or at least kind of, you know, lean heavily on that subject on a show real early on, and so I'm glad we have that opportunity to do that here tonight. Is there anything you want to add to your introduction that I may have missed?
Oh, no, you built me up great. Thank you.
Right. Well, you know, I want you and everybody to know that we do this program to give the community an opportunity to call in and speak with guests. That, of course, is one of the main values that we can bring. But not only that, we archive these shows, as you well know, and make them available for download later on to anybody that wants them. So, you know, that's probably going to cast a little bit wider net than we may here on the live version. So we just want to make sure that folks have a really good sense about who you are, and I think they probably do. So let me just start off with a couple of things that I'd like to ask you about, and I'd like to give you the opportunity right off the bat here to give us all a little bit of a primer on your CrossFit operation in Chico. You can talk a little bit about the evolution of CrossFit NorCal and the facility that you have there, and the scope of the training, whatever really you think is interesting about your operation. Would you, Rob?
Oh, sure. I think actually just the beginning of CrossFit NorCal is a little bit interesting. I was living in Seattle, actually helping Dave Warner and Nick Nibbler get CrossFit North going, but had really missed seeing the sun and being in warm climes and stuff like that.
Hey, don't you be dissing my Seattle weather up here now.
sorry. We like our green things to be trees instead of mold.
Right.
I just had to, I was really interested in getting back to Northern California, and Coach Glassman knew that I had some leanings that direction, and he knew a guy, John Frankel, who has a pretty amazing background, black belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and teaches kickboxing, and also happens to have a PhD in Korean literature from Harvard University, of all places. And he wanted to get into Northern California. And so Coach introduced both of us via email, and just over basically two email interactions, we both decided to up and move. John was actually in Seoul, Korea at the time, and I was in Seattle, and we both moved to Chico and opened up what was NorCal Martial Arts Academy, which included CrossFit NorCal. And we ended up outgrowing that location in about 6 months, and then ventured out on our own. And we were in basically a giant 12,000 square foot shed with spiders and pigeons and all kinds of fun stuff. And then we just moved into a really nice finished out facility about 4 months ago. And CrossFit NorCal includes myself, Nikki Violetti, Greg Everett, they're co-owners and trainers, and the scope of stuff we work, it's like all the other affiliates. We work with everything from kids to the elderly to, you know, college professors to police and military. So it just covers the gamut of folks that we work with.
Mm-hmm. Some of the CrossFit facilities I know have, you know, some of them have some slightly different specialty. Some of them are very involved in martial arts and some not. So so I just thought I'd give you a chance to kind of touch on some of the areas outside of CrossFit that you incorporate into your training out there.
I used to coach kickboxing a bit, and so we've been working some of that in. And then since being exposed to Coach Bergner's Olympic lift, we've really been going after that. We're going to field a team at the American Open come December, and so we've been really hitting the Olympic lifts pretty hard. Greg Everett is about 10 years younger than I am and a much better athlete than I am, so he's really given me a run, and we're pushing each other pretty well. But Nikki actually has the best technique in the whole establishment right now, so I think we're going to do pretty well. It's a lot of fun, so I guess outside of the basic CrossFit curriculum, we put in a little bit of kickboxing, Vale Tudo work, and then definitely a lot of Olympic lifts.
Wow, great.
Yeah.
So you have an interesting background in your science, your studies in biochemistry. I'm curious how that area of study crosses over into that of human nutrition and the effect on health and performance. Can you talk about how your studies prepared you for you know, becoming real heavily involved in the nutritional aspect of things?
Oh, gosh. It's interesting. Coach Glassman has really influenced my thinking on this a lot. Sometimes I think the academic training that one gets, and definitely that I got, is sometimes as much a hindrance to effective coaching as it is a help. It gave me a good basic understanding of physics and chemistry, biochemistry and whatnot, but it was fascinating because there were so many contradictions just in my undergrad training. There was a day when we were talking about the state of ketosis, and that it was on the one hand portrayed as this highly toxic event, but then the book also mentioned that, you know, once the body adapts to it, that the brain and heart and lungs and kidney and everything run on ketone bodies more efficiently than glucose. And it was this interesting thing that seemed totally counter to everything that my academic career was talking about, but nobody was interested in investigating it because it was just really flew in the face of the prevailing, you know, paradigm and whatnot. So I would say it's been helpful, but to really get in and help people on a, you know, individual realistic level, I don't know if the academic background was all that much. It's getting people to just experiment and try and see what their body responds to is, I think, the most important thing that I've discovered with that.
You are listening to CrossFit Live, June the 5th, 2005, and the guest on this edition is Rob Wolf. This is Dave Young. Phone lines available for you right now. Visit CrossFitLive.com and hit the calling the show link for complete instructions. Lines are open right now if you'd like to get in questions for Rob Wolf. And you have something now, Rob, called the Performance Menu.
Yeah.
So I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, the background, the genesis of it, and what you cover in the Performance Menu and what your goals for the publication are.
Oh, yeah. Maybe 2 years, we averaged somewhere between 50 and 100 emails a week that dealt with nutrition questions primarily. What do I have for breakfast? What's a carb? What's a protein? What's a fat? What's a block? It just ran the gamut, but a lot of consistency in questions and just a big volume of questions. And it occurred to me that starting some sort of a publication that addressed, and it seemed like one of the main issues that folks had was how to effectively feed themselves in a time efficient manner, but keep the nutritional quality intact.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to be a recurring theme. So that's really the genesis and the main thrust of the Performance Menu is getting people aware of some effective approaches for performance nutrition that's going to enhance performance, health, and longevity. And then we've branched into a bit of interviews with some of our top-end CrossFit community folks and then folks outside the community like Arthur Devaney, professor of economics down at UC Irvine, who I think brought a lot of people to the CrossFit community with his work with Evolutionary Fitness. And then Professor Lauren Cordain of Colorado State University, who wrote the Paleolithic Diet book and has a new book coming out, The Paleo Diet for Athletes. So we're getting people both in our community and kind of peripheral but supportive to what CrossFit is about, and just bringing their voices in and seeing what they have to say.
I noticed in my studies of reading over your performance menus and looking into the paleo diet, there are definitely some distinctions between diets that are characterized as paleo and diets that are characterized as zone,
mm-hmm.
which of course has been the primary diet that the CrossFit community knows about and has been recommended to. I'd like for you to, from your background, to spell out some of those distinctions and talk about the relevance to CrossFitters, I suppose to performance in general, the relevance between the distinctions between the two diets and how you think it's all going to work for the average athlete.
Sure. In my mind, the zone primarily deals with macronutrient ratios. How much protein, how much fat, how much carbohydrate are you eating at any given meal, throughout a day, throughout a week, and whatnot. Kind of a Paleolithic type perspective deals much more with quality or types of food. So it's looking at foods that it typically this is much more my own distinction with it, but that tend to not have negative consequences to eating it, namely high insulin levels. High rates of autoimmune cross-reactivity with things like grains and legumes and dairy and some things like that. So the zone really, the zone in what would classically be termed like a Paleolithic diet are actually very, very similar in a lot of ways. But for some people, they have very pronounced, possibly even life-threatening reactions to things like wheat and dairy and things like that. So the taking the additional step of removing these items from their diet, I think from a performance perspective can fine-tune things by decreasing the immunological load that they're getting. They're going to be not challenging their immune systems in kind of an unfavorable way, and it also tends to remove some foods that can be very insulin spiking, and the high insulin levels can lead into the type 2 diabetes, all these syndrome X type diseases of cancer, high blood pressure, just a whole plethora of things. So,
right.
Yeah.
Diet is such nutrition, I guess I should call it, is such a complex subject. Obviously, books have been written about them, and some which probably both you and I would consider to be really good good bodies of work on the subject can also be a little contradictory. Can contradict each other to some extent, although those probably tend to be fairly minor. But it's such a complex problem that it's no wonder that people are vexed by all of the information out there and wanting to know which way they should go specifically. And I know that a lot of us, you know, we try real hard for perfection in our diet, and it's a great goal. I don't want to minimize that at all, but there's a lot of people out there that to hear about that is overwhelming, you know.
Right.
So I think it's important to point out, first of all, that even small steps toward what we would either call paleo or zone diet can make some huge improvements in people. I think that's a real important message that folks need to hear. But in that regard, what would you say the first steps should be? In other words, if you were going to ease into one of these diets, and again, let's kind of just lump them together for the purpose of this question. If you were going to ease into it, what would you say the process should be? And what are the most important things you can do to improve the quality of your nutrition diet, especially in regards to the kind of training that the people are doing?
Oh, gosh. Dan John has some great stuff on this, and I think it sounds maybe ridiculous, but eat breakfast. You know, it's almost regardless of the content, if you just eat some breakfast, you know, there's great statistics on it and just, you know, general anecdotal information that, you know, if you eat something in the morning, you're gonna probably benefit from that in general. But even within that, there's maybe some exceptions if we start talking about some intermittent fasting and stuff like that. But you know, eat breakfast, avoid processed foods. I mean, anything in a can, box, jar generally is bad news. And if you can move towards that, regardless, I mean, even if folks are still eating, you know, what would be considered like non-paleo foods or whatever, but if they're cooking it themselves, it's fresh, you know, they're kind of connected to their food in that way. It almost universally, you clean up a lot of stuff.
Right.
And if you try to get a little bit of protein at each meal, hopefully some vegetable matter at each meal, if you do those little things, suddenly you've got a diet that may get you teased when you're at work because it's so much, you know, so much better than what everybody else is doing. And it's fairly minor steps to get to that, just like you pointed out.
Yeah.
So, and I think it gets you miles down the road towards better performance and better overall health.
All right, you're listening to CrossFit Live. This is the Voice of Elite Fitness, Dave Young and Rob Wolf here with you. Rob, we got a caller on the line for you. Would you like to chat with somebody from the community?
Sure.
Let's do it. From the 360 area code, on with Rob Wolf. Who's there?
This is Scott Hagness.
Hello, Scott.
Scotty, how are you doing?
How's it going?
Good, good. How are you? Your grand opening's coming up soon, right?
Yeah, it's creeping up here in August 20th, I think.
August 20th.
Introductions for everybody. Scott, where are you calling from?
Basically Portland, Oregon.
All right.
I have CrossFit Portland here.
Okay.
And
I've been reading about you. That's right.
Yeah. I've been busy getting everything together. It's an understatement.
Scott's an amazing athlete. He has a pretty enviable background himself and gymnastic skills, and always posts some pretty crushing times on the message board. So.
Well, Scott, what would you like to contribute or ask of Rob tonight?
Well, I've been following the evolutionary fitness threads that Art Devaney has up, and been kind of curious about more about the intermittency. I've been experimenting a little bit with it, but kind of by the seat of my pants, because it's kind of, there's nothing really out there that I know of about it except what we're seeing now. So I was kind of curious how, I know you've been doing that for a while, and kind of what your approach was on that.
I hope that this doesn't get, Dave, if this gets too far afield, just rein me in and let me know, but there's been some research.
You go for it, man.
It's been done for a long time dealing with caloric restriction with animals and the caloric restriction resulting in increased longevity in these animals. Typically they reduce the amount of calories that the animals would normally eat by about 40%, and they find that their average lifespan about doubles. And so, if you extrapolated that to humans, then you would potentially be pushing the you know, average lifespan out to like 120 years, 115 years. But it requires basically being hungry all the time. And so there's this other approach that was done, which was basically eat all you want one day, don't eat anything the next day, and they found really similar, if not superior, results on this intermittent fasting approach that they did with the caloric restriction approach. And but the interesting thing with the intermittent fasting approach is that these the animals that went through this whole thing, they did not lose any body mass, didn't lose any muscle mass, and they get a pronounced increase in their neuroendocrine response to exercise, and also a really enhanced immune response. Interesting blood markers of both anabolism, which is, you know, kind of anabolic state of insulin-like growth factors, growth hormone, and all these things that we really kind of want as athletes, but also this thing that they call the adrenal cortical response, which is this intermittent stress response, which increases antioxidant stores in the body and tends to destroy cancer cells and does all this just wonderful stuff. And so what I've been tinkering with is basically about a 15-hour period of not eating. I try to go to bed with about 3 to 4 hours of, do my last meal about 3 or 4 hours before I've gone to bed, get up. We typically do some classes, CrossFit classes in the morning, do a workout on an empty stomach, and then eat an hour or so later. And it's been interesting. I am heavier and leaner than I've ever been in my life, and keep getting a few PRs in the Olympic lifts and stuff, and with a stressful and busy schedule. So I'm really intrigued by it. I don't know if it's the approach for everybody, but it's been an interesting one for me, for sure.
And you do this pretty much every day?
Most days. Most days. And then I just try to pack in 4 or 5 meals during that window of time between the morning and the early afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Now, Rob, I have to ask, how does that fit into the hormonal balance picture that is typically talked about in terms of eating fewer meals? I mean more meals, but more frequently.
You're still kind of it's kind of spackling together a number of different approaches here. You are actually eating frequently and fairly frequent meals during that time that you are eating, but then you've got a period in which you are not eating at all. And so it's like you pointed out, it's these contradictions, you know.
Yeah,
well, we should eat very consistently, and that definitely works. There are folks who do the zone, who eat a really consistent 5 meals a day every day, and obviously do wonderfully on it. But I've been intrigued if there was yet another way that's maybe better, or just a different way that's maybe equally good, or does it have other things going on with it? So
you think that's what you're finding with this intermittent fasting then, right?
It's easier for me because, and this is funny coming from someone who is a chemist, but I absolutely hate weighing and measuring stuff. And even with my eyeball method, I would find that, like, I would run out of some fruit or something like that. And being very, very busy, it was challenging to always have like a 4-block meal on hand.
Right.
And perhaps better organized life, I could pull that off. But I find that the way that I do this, some meals are perhaps a little heavier in fat and protein. Some meals are a little heavier in carbs. And at the end of the day, it all seems to work out well for me. So I have found some latitude with, you know, some flexibility with that. And that was part of the reason for the performance menu also, was to explore some of these other nutritional approaches. For the folks who are familiar with Art Devaney, he's been doing some work like this for a long time, and his results are pretty darn impressive as far as body composition, performance parameters that he has and whatnot. And also just kind of ease of living. A lot of this I like to, you know, Dave, you were pointing out that, you know, it's really hard to approach any of this stuff, and I think it's just good to have a lot of different tools for people to use if they're going to attack their nutrition in some way and try something new.
Yeah, sure. Lots of options, I think, are always going to hit a lot more people. Are you going to get a lot more people involved in healthy eating if they have more different ways they can approach it? And it sounds to me like there may be several options out there for
sure. Yeah.
Well, Scott, anything else going on for you?
Interesting. Yeah. So you kind of don't specifically cycle your macronutrients, do you? Kind of I know one of the performance menus talked about the metabolic diet, which I think kind of gets into some of that cyclic. You kind of just do it more seat of the pants, kind of?
A little bit more seat of the pants, yeah. But I think that one could take a something like the metabolic diet, which is kind of a cyclic low carb, a couple of days you eat low carb, one day maybe you eat a lot more carbs, and there's a lot of different ways of doing that. I think that that approach could be adapted to an intermittent fasting regimen pretty easily. And in some ways, I guess that's kind of the way my nutrition plays itself out. It's kind of dependent on what I've got left in the fridge, you know, before I need to go shopping again. So, yeah.
Interesting. Well, good to talk to you. And
great talking to you,
Scott. Good luck with the grand opening. I've got a little contest at my gym that day, so unfortunately I won't be able to make it down. I was going to try and make it down. But,
Okay. We'll do our best to get up there for you, but we're going to have Sierra Nevada and meat and all kinds of good stuff at ours, so if you can get there, you'll have a good time.
Yeah, it's possible I still might.
Okay.
I scouted out some good Indian restaurants for you up here, too.
Oh, cool, good. We were hoping to track some down. Cool.
Yeah. Scott, right. Scott, I'd like, as long as I've got you on the phone, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your facility. I've read a little bit about it, but why don't you tell everybody what stage you're in, and you're obviously open right now, but you're having a grand opening coming up soon?
Yeah, I think August 20th is going to be our grand opening. Going pretty well for not having my website done or really any advertising. We keep getting almost every day I have a class, I have a new person walk in.
Yeah, that's
amazing. Cool. Friday we had like three new walk-ins for the first class. So it's been going really, really well.
Well, we may move up there and work with you.
I think it's going to be an amazing city for it, actually. And it's kind of, as far as I know, the first true urban location, because we're pretty much downtown.
Right.
Portland, you know, we're not right amongst the skyscrapers, but real near. Right.
I know Portland fairly well. What part of town are you in?
It's on the corner of Powell Boulevard and Southeast 21st.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so Powell's the pretty main
right.
one. And
right.
We have our people, we have a kind of, it worked out real well if there's a short block around the building, which is right about 400 meters. So it's awesome to have people
excellent.
Just out there running down, you know, by the bus stop, sprinting around the corner.
That's awesome.
Good for visibility, too.
Yeah. We did a medicine ball mile workout a few days, or I guess it was last week, where I mapped a mile out around neighborhoods, and we threw medicine balls in a variety of patterns to each other, sprinting ahead to catch.
Oh, nice.
Partner drill kind of thing.
Yeah.
That worked out pretty well. But, yeah, definitely going well. We're in with a martial arts school, kind of like the same way you started, you know, and...
It's a great marriage. It's a really good way to start that stuff off. Yeah.
How's your Scott? How's your building? What are you working out of? Can you describe it to us?
It's actually a brand new facility. It just was finished construction in February, I think. I'm terrible with square footage, but it's pretty large. There's a large area that have hardwood floors, which we don't get on that too much. And then there's a large area with padded floors, which is just great for any kind of gymnastics or any kind of ground-based drill. Great. And that's where we have pull-up bar rings, rope climb. We're getting a car ladder and another rope in here shortly.
Nice.
And then we have a weight room area where we have, works as a platform for Olympic lifts and everything else is in there, kettlebells and whatnot.
Cool.
And then I also incorporate club bells into it a little bit. We work those into the workouts of the day periodically.
Nice.
All right. Well, I appreciate you listening tonight. Thanks a lot for giving us a ring.
Yeah.
Good luck to you. I'm just up the road in Seattle, so I'm going to get down one of these days and pop in and see you.
Definitely, yeah. Come down and check us out.
All right, sure will.
All right, talk to you later.
Thanks,
bye.
Scott.
Bye.
All right. Didn't mean to take up too much of your time, Rob, but I just thought I always like to encourage, guys that are opening new facilities. And, as you well know, that's a... that's not always an easy task.
It's a huge thing, but Scotty is just a great guy. I think he's an amazing coach and just a fun person, so I think he's going to do great there.
All right, well, let's chat with somebody else here as long as we got a caller on from the 413 area code. You are on CrossFit Live with Rob Wolf. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Who's this?
My name's Fred.
Hello, Fred.
Hey, I'm pretty new to CrossFit, and I've just been looking at a number of different diets. The paleo diet is very striking. I'm very interested in it. I also just wanted to ask you, do you know anything about acid alkaline diets? For instance, one proposed by Dr. Young.
I read some of the Young work. He proposes a alkalinizing diet that's mainly built around kind of a vegetarian approach. The work that Boyd Eaton and Lauren Cordain have done, and Lauren Cordain's main website, thepaleodiet.com,
yeah,
and then you go to articles, and I believe there's a wonderful description of acid base there. The Paleolithic diet is best as we can reconstruct was definitely an alkalinizing diet. So it's, it makes sense on a lot of different levels as far as bone demineralization, hormone status. It makes insulin work better. It definitely seems to make everything that we want to have happen work better, and the things that we don't want to have happen, it tends to minimize it. It's subtle compared to a lot of other things. I think that some people are more affected by a net acid load versus a alkalinizing load, but I think there's definitely something to it.
Yeah. What in terms of protein intake? That's what the meals I'm usually eating, just because of the place I live, are mainly vegetarian.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I used to be a pretty big meat eater, and I noticed, because of that, just in terms of the intensity of my workouts and muscle mass, it's very challenging to maintain a higher level of intensity and maintain that mass.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on vegetarian protein versus animal protein?
In general, it seems like now are you talking, with vegetarian seems to be like a really broad term. It can range anywhere from fish to only tofu. So are we talking like vegan or black ovo or?
No fish, no red meat, no chicken.
Okay.
Protein coming from tofu, seitan, stuff like that.
From vegetable sources, in other words,
vegetable sources only. Generally, it doesn't work as well. I mean, it's doable. Almost universally, what we see is we'll get someone doing CrossFit who's basically vegan, and we'll get their protein up higher with these vegetarian sources, which is way far better than just the beans, rice, pasta that they were typically doing prior to that.
Right.
And then almost inevitably they start creeping back into, it starts with eggs, and then we'll have a little bit of fish, and then there's organic chicken, and then it's just kind of off to the races. I think generally if you're doing anything like CrossFit, heavy Olympic lifting, wrestling, kickboxing, whatever, if your work output is really high, there are a few people who can sustain that longer than others with a really, inadequate protein level and inadequate essential fatty acid level, but it's going to get you eventually.
That's definitely been my experience.
Yeah. I mean, you can pull it off if you're diligent about it. I mean, it's basically eating a lot of the soy-based proteins, but then trying to eat a lot of vegetables and fruits and displacing the rice, the beans, and all that sort of stuff. The soy has its own bag of issues in that you get a lot of potential allergic reaction, autoimmune reaction, problems with the thyroid. It can really down-regulate thyroid function. And it's got a pretty high estrogen load, so men can actually
blow
their testosterone levels with it and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's
tricky.
I support anybody in what they're doing, but it's definitely not the approach that I would recommend for optimum health and performance. That's for
right,
sure.
Definitely.
Yeah.
What in terms of whey protein supplementation? What are your thoughts on positive negative effects of getting a majority of protein from meal replacements, for instance? My sense is there seems to be a lot of chemicals in them.
Well, everything's made of chemicals, so I wouldn't. I know you're talking synthetic stuff, my issue with that is it's pretty highly processed, and that's kind of some of the stuff that Dave brought up way at the beginning of this, is just trying to get people to eat real food no matter what it is.
Yeah, right.
So if the person's going to eat tofu and a bunch of greens versus a Metrex shake or something, I'd rather have them eat the real food. And I don't know if it's just kind of a kooky bias. I don't know if I can really hang any science on that, but it seems like if people are just cooking their own food and eating their own food and taking the time to do that stuff. There's a lot of other lifestyle issues that kind of get addressed. But when we're driving and guzzling down some food or eating a bagel at the same time, you know, when you allow your life to just drift and get faster and faster and faster, such that you need to resort to these things, I think that there are other problems going on besides just the nutrition. So,
Yeah. That makes total sense.
Yeah. One thing I would really highly recommend if it works within your scheme of things is getting some fish oil. If you could still take fish oil, then that would be good. If not, then getting some flax oil for sure. Flax doesn't work as well as the fish oil, but
doesn't
get some omega-3s.
Well.
Pardon?
You said it doesn't work as well.
Does not work anywhere as well. It can actually cause its own set of problems because of really limited enzyme systems that turn the flax oil into the two essential fatty acids that are found in fish oil. But but it's better than nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
And in terms of putting on and keeping on mass, I noticed a little bit on the forum that you were talking about a high intake of olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other recommendations on how to put on mass? I'm definitely a hard gainer.
The protein's got to be there. The total calories need to be there. Are you doing the CrossFit workout of the day, or?
I'm definitely incorporating it. It's just in the past couple of weeks, and it's been amazing.
I would recommend
up level things in a major way.
Yeah, I would recommend doing the workout of the day.
Yeah.
Just sticking with that, starting off conservative with it, and then ratcheting up the intensity.
Yeah.
And if you you might want to try the zone. Like there's a lot of, like Tony was saying, there's a lot of different approaches out there. Sometimes the zone is a really good place for people to start because you get a sense, particularly since your protein sources are a little
a little
dicey, then it's going to ensure that you're getting enough protein. And then you can start adding it. You know, you do the basic zone, which is going to lean you out. And then once you get leaned out, your body fat drops below 10%, then you start adding in more fat, and you'll start increasing your muscle mass typically.
Uh-huh.
And it works like the dickens. I mean, it works like crazy, but it requires some discipline, and you've really got to stick to it. But it'll definitely work.
Uh-huh.
There's some other approaches out there, but I think if you're going to be using some vegetarian sources, that might be a really smart way to go so that you're insured about getting that baseline of protein and essential fats and whatnot.
Yeah.
Fred, is it Fred? Is that your name?
Yeah, right, yes.
Where are you calling from?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Well, great to have you listening tonight. Thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
I really appreciate the routine. CrossFit is amazing.
Yeah, it's great.
Shoot me an email if you like, and then I can send you out some other stuff, kind of get you going on this.
I'll definitely do that. Thanks a lot, Rob.
Right.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Thanks, Fred. Rob, what is your contact information, if you wouldn't mind people dropping you an email? Why don't you give that out?
It's robb@crossfitnorcal.com.
All right. Terrific. You can talk to Rob Wolf on the phone if you would like. Visit CrossFitLive.com and hit the call in the show link. There will be complete instructions there for you, and there are lines available right now. We have got another caller on the line for you, Rob, from the 425 area code up in this neck of the woods that you're on CrossFit Live with Rob Wolf. Who's there? Hello, 425. Come on.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, there?
Who is this?
This is Justin Davis.
How are you?
Actually, 206. That's why I got confused.
Oh, well, your caller ID says 425, my friend.
Oh, go figure. Go figure. Blame it on the techie guy.
That's right.
Well, I'm glad we got you. What's on your mind tonight?
Oh, well, I've been doing CrossFit there at CrossFit North since about October.
Mm-hmm.
And been zoning probably about for the last 3 months thereabouts. Been doing all right in city. On the weekends, I like to go out, do the big ski trips, that sort of thing. Climbing season is upon us, and I have not been able to figure out the proper diet in the zone side of things for like a 12-hour, 14-hour effort. I've been trying what I've been referring to as the meat bar,
yeah,
which is as opposed to like the power bar. or the packet of goo, which is like cheese and roast beef, and that's not really cutting it. Just curious as to suggestions to stay on sort of a zone type of thing, or whether I even ought to be trying to stay on a zone type of an approach for, like I said, about a 12-hour or 14-hour effort.
I don't see any problem with keeping on zone parameters with that. How many blocks are you doing, and what bat level are you at?
I've been doing pretty. I'm still playing around with it. Just been doing 4-block meals, 2-block snacks.
Okay, so you're 16 blocks total for
yeah.
the day. How tall are you? How much do you weigh?
I'm 5'10", about 180.
180. And percent body fat, probably around like 12, 14, or?
That's my guess. Maybe a little bit less than that. I'm not super worried about that.
Okay. And then are you still doing just the base zone, or have you multiplied your fat blocks yet?
I have not been, honestly, I haven't been measuring as well as I should.
Oh, man.
But, you know, that I'll take responsibility for.
Right. So are you just feeling pooped on these big excursions, or what's the thing that you're wanting to fix?
I feel like I'm hovering closer to the bonk than I did before trying the zone diet.
Okay.
To further complicate things, I've got I go into anaphylactic shock when it comes to fish and nuts.
Crikey, okay.
So, yeah, that makes the whole power bar concept more difficult as well.
How about coconut?
I can do it.
You can do coconut. Okay. It sounds like you're possibly on these excursions running too lean. Although if you do the zone real dialed in, are you working out about 3 days a week at CrossFit North, or?
2 days a week at CrossFit North, and then one day in between, and then the weekend.
And then,
I'm either working out, doing a CrossFit workout from the site, or something I cook up. Or I'm out skiing, climbing.
Okay. If you get that zone diet tightened a bit, then you will likely, one, lean out, and then that's going to give you a little bit of it just does some nice stuff metabolically. It's something to shoot for. Even if you only do it for a couple of weeks, you know, really weighing and measuring everything, it'll pay off. You won't regret that. Something we've actually got a recipe for this coming out in the next performance menu, but it's pemmican, and you basically take dried meat. You may have to prep it yourself, or buy just basically some jerky that's got some ingredients that aren't gonna cause any anaphylaxis issues with you. You throw that stuff in a food processor, get some shaved coconut, and then some actual coconut butter or coconut oil. And pour it over the stuff, and it basically makes a protein fat brick. And if you put a little bit of dried fruit in with it, and if you do this in a big pie sheet, then you can figure out, say you put 10 blocks worth of protein into it, and then you're going to end up with probably about 50 or 60 blocks worth of fat. And then if you get like 10 blocks worth of carbs, proportion through the whole thing and then cut it into 5 pieces, then you've got, you know, a 5x, fat multiplier on, with the fat, but then you can have your protein and carbs proportion normally. And we're going to have the performance menu out on that just here in about a week. So, if that didn't make total sense, then we'll have that out soon. But that's a really good option, particularly if you've got the nut allergy. So
in short, amp up the fat on the long trip.
Yeah, and I would as much as you can dial that zone in so that you get a sense of what's happening with it, so that you really know how much you need to run. And once you lean out, it does some really nice stuff as far as like insulin levels and testosterone levels and all that, and just general performance. So it's worth it doing that weighing and measuring for a couple of weeks, and it'll improve your eyeball method immeasurably. So,
all right.
Yeah.
All right. Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks so much for calling. We appreciate it. And you can as well. We have lines available for you. Those listening would like to have a chat with Rob Wolf. We encourage your phone calls. You find complete details at CrossFitLive.com on the call-in show link. And you can go there right now. And like I said, we've got lines available for you. So get on in here and join the conversation with Rob Wolf from CrossFit NorCal. And we're talking primarily about nutrition tonight. But I never want to limit things too much. I just wanted to make sure we got a chance to touch on this subject here before too much time got by. And glad that you could join us tonight, Rob, and give us the benefit of all of your wisdom. Got another performance menu coming out in a week or so, did you say?
Yeah, the 15th.
How do people subscribe to Performance Menu?
It's off the CrossFit NorCal website, and we've got a freebie that you can download and check out. It has an interview with Professor Art Devaney. It's got a bunch of recipes in it, some kind of cool capoeira moves, gymnastics-type moves from Ido Portal in Israel, and some pretty fun stuff.
All right, so that's CrossFitNorCal.com, right?
Yeah.
All right. Number of things I want to touch on with you tonight, and some of them fairly specific, such as this one, and it has to do with artificial sweeteners. I'd like you to comment on artificial sweeteners conceptually and specifically, if there are any that you like better than others, if you think it's just something we ought to stay away from entirely. What's your take on that?
Oh, gosh, that's kind of a tough one. It's definitely a fairly individualized thing. I guess kind of the biggie sweeteners out there, there's still some saccharin floating around.
Right.
There's aspartame. There's sucralose. I think goes Splenda is the mm-hmm. brand name. And then there's this extract from a plant called stevia. And all of them, it's interesting. One of our common questions, both on the message board and that we get, is, and you may ask this later, but, you know, what about caffeine? What about coffee?
Yeah.
And the deal with caffeine and coffee is in people who are already pretty lean and athletic, it tends to be an ergogenic aid. It tends to make them perform better. It tends to be lipolytic. It releases fats into the bloodstream for energy. It tends to be a good thing. For somebody who's insulin resistant and overweight, it can actually exacerbate the insulin resistance. And so it's kind of the same story with the sweeteners. If you have a normal insulin response, the sweeteners may not be that big of a thing, but they do definitely release insulin, and sometimes very, very profoundly, and that can, again, lead into this insulin resistance problem. So I think it's better to have, you know, if you're just dying for a soda, to have a diet versus a regular soda. The high fructose corn syrup is just horrible, bad stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's an improvement as far as that goes, but it's not saving you by a whole lot, because even just the taste of something pretty sweet, and again, particularly if somebody is very insulin resistant, it causes a really pronounced insulin response. So it's still not saving you that much. You're still getting a lot of the deleterious effects of drinking something that's just very, very sweet.
So even the absence of the calories, I guess, like you say, it's just not saving you all that much, huh?
It's better, but yeah. It's not as much better as what you would like. And and a lot of the things, like aspartame, actually has some effects of slowing down the metabolic rate, so you actually burn fewer calories.
Oh,
so
nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that. Usually folks are drinking these diet drinks kind of in the hopes of losing weight, or they've got some weight issues or some other issues, but it's compounding their problems. But it's hard. I admit it's very hard. Folks get very, very addicted to that stuff.
Well, you know, I'm a very big fan. I tell my clients all the time, you've got to be in control of what you put in your mouth, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
You've got to be in control of what you put in your mouth. Now, given that, it's nice to have some choices, and it's nice to eat something satisfying and pleasing occasionally. And I don't think anybody wants to take away any more of that than we absolutely have to.
Yeah.
So it's good to check on these things, you know, these little things, because they can make a big difference to some people.
They really can. We've had some clients that have cut the regular soda out and improved, but they were doing the diet sodas and just didn't shed the body weight that they really should have been doing. They were actually doing a pretty good zone, or just, you know, cleaned up their diet a lot and keeping a good food log and everything, but they still had the sodas in there, and they finally cut the sodas, and there was kind of some nail biting and some problems when they went through almost this kind of withdrawals or detox or something. But then the weight peeled off, their performance improved, and
yep.
and it was pretty profound.
Yep.
Yeah.
Some wailing and gnashing of teeth.
Yes.
Boy, I'll tell you what, boy, that sugar addiction, man, it is it's serious stuff.
It's another white powder. So.
I'll tell you.
Yep.
I'm sure you've run into this as much as I have, but the people who just are so resistant to they won't believe that it's that bad for them. That's a tough one.
It really is. And you know, Art Devaney had some good stuff to say on this. Just in a lot of the folks in the kind of evolutionary biology realm, just that in the past, if you got a hunk of sugar like that or just refined carbohydrates, you tend to release insulin and you tend to store body fat, and that was a big head towards starving to death if the winter went bad. So
that's right.
It's really our body's wisdom that's kind of gone awry because we've just got way too much food available and not enough exercise foisted upon us.
Yep.
So yeah.
Okay, for Rob Wolf in the 917 area code, you are on CrossFit Live. Hi.
Hello.
Who's there?
Hey, this is Joshua Newman out in New York City.
Hey, Josh, how are you doing?
I love Josh.
I'm doing very well. So first, I just want to say how much I hugely appreciate all of your comments. My background is as a neuroscience dork before escaping that world, and it's always really great to see your comments and just how you know, well-reasoned, scientifically based, and still, you know, really put to the test they are. So just first, thank you so much.
Oh, gosh, thank you.
Second thing is, I guess, so I've been eating paleo for a couple of years, and I'm naturally not a terribly large guy. I was at about 130 pounds. Started doing the zone and put on maybe 4 or 5 pounds of lean mass, which it turns out it really, really helped my workout of the day since I've been torturing myself trying to do the sort of prescribed weight rather than scale it down to a smaller size.
Sure.
And so I guess my question is, you had mentioned on the board in times past about having been the catabolic kid and having really tried to sort of, you know, eat to put on lean mass. And I was curious how much you think either nutrition should be dragged along, I guess, by the workout where you just work out hard and then hope that'll take you to where you want to be lean mass-wise, or whether you should actually be, in some cases, putting the nutrition sort of first and saying, I'm going to purposely try and put on lean mass, in the hopes that that'll then drag along some of the workout stuff.
Oh, wow. That's just a great question. They're super intertwined. Good nutrition is going to really enhance your insulin sensitivity, your testosterone levels, your growth hormone levels, and it's going to really increase the efficacy of a good training regimen like CrossFit, because CrossFit I know Coach Glassman doesn't like to kind of digress into these things, but there's a profound neuroendocrine response and hormonal response that releases all these anabolic hormones, basically. And good nutrition will make that so much better. Like we were talking a little bit before with the caloric restriction and intermittent fasting enhancing the response to the neuroendocrine response to exercise. So they're kind of hand in glove. It's when people want to gain weight, you know, muscle mass, and I usually say chase performance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, try to get a couple more pull-ups. Try to get a couple more reps with body weight on clean and jerk. Get your Diane times down a little more. You know what I mean? It's when you chase that performance end primarily, and then make sure that the nutrition side is well addressed, the two things really work. What I find is if people start really focusing on the nutrition side, they start really overeating.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to stick too much fat in. They're going to, you know, they're going to start sneaking up more blocks in total. They're like, oh, well, 16 is good. 17 will be better. And so there's kind of this neurosis that sets in on the diet side. People do sometimes exercise too much and burn out, but I think if you're kind of approaching the workout of the day as it comes and you've got a couple of pet projects that you're working on and you're just chasing performance, that back end side is going to really take care of itself. I remember coaches said something like that. Art Devaney used to always say, you know, squat 400 pounds, deadlift 500 pounds, be able to sprint, you know, a bunch of 100-meter repeats within a certain amount of time. And if you can do that, you know, your lean body mass issues are dealt with. You know, it's like you're a monster. So does that make sense? Does that help?
It definitely does. Yeah, it sounds totally right. I just wanted to make sure that I didn't need to be jumping on the nutrition more rather than the old and always tried to be avoided, just get in there and get to work kind of thing.
Yeah, really the exercise, good sleep, and then are you doing the zone? Are you doing just kind of a paleo seat of your pants sort of thing?
No, I am doing the zone. Nicole, I was her guinea pig for
web-based
journal, and so I'm now at two times on the fat and toying with the idea of maybe going to three, but easing my way slowly towards that. So,
what's your body fat level at?
Probably 6 or 7%, but I wrestled for years and have been sort of lean all the way through, so that's been less of a concern for me.
Okay. Well, I would definitely pop that block level up to four, you know, three. Maybe take it a week at a time. Go three for a week or a week and a half, and then pop it up to four.
Great.
If you start smoothing out a little bit, then just dial it back.
sounds great.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for checking in with us tonight. From New York, what part of New York are you in?
I'm right in Midtown Manhattan, actually,
wow.
Looking out of my office window, sadly enough.
Oh, nice. Do you get to work out with Norma there?
We have done the New York workout of the month up in Central Park.
Oh,
we did
cool.
Mugging Gone Bad and several other New York conventions. So
awesome.
Indeed.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
John, good to hear from you.
You too.
My next question has to do, Rob, with your preferred method for determining one's daily caloric requirements.
I probably would not. How do I want to answer that? I would look first at how desperate this person is. What's their situation? If they're pretty, if they've got a lot of health issues going on and whatnot, then I would probably get them. And then also, it really depends on how much compliance there is. Frequently putting someone on a highly regimented program is going to launch them right out the other side. So if the person seems like they're very regimented and they like a lot of structure, then something like the zone is perfect for them. You're going to know exactly what protein level they need to be at, what carbohydrate level. You're going to sneak in a little bit of fat, and it's going to work great for them if they're really regimented with that. If somebody's a little more loosey-goosey with their just life, and it sounds like sticking them on something really regimented like that is going to just freak them out, then just trying to work on quality first. You know, like you asked way back, just trying to displace the processed foods, trying to make sure that there's some real protein at each meal. And so I never would I sit down like a registered dietitian and you know, figure out their body mass index and then calculate, you know, how much energy they're expending and all that. It's mm-hmm. nifty science, but it would make me just want to jump off a cliff pretty quickly. and I don't see it really doing much of anything for folks other than occasionally it's a little bit of smoke and mirrors. I know a lot of gyms do this stuff and charge just a exorbitant amount of money for it, but it doesn't really tell you that much. If you start becoming less active or more active, then it really alters what the energy expenditures are. And fundamentally, we're not designed to live at a flat, we're not an account sheet. Some days we're going to be over, some days we're going to be under, and that tends to keep the body working really well. When you become very static and stable state, things get a little squirrely with the body. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about percentage lean body mass, or body fat percentage. What do you recommend? Is there an optimal number? Is the optimal number going to change based on some other variables? What's your take on that?
For men, it looks like somewhere below 10%, but not below 6 to 5% seems to be a real nice spot to cruise at. They when The body fat level drops a little bit. There's a process called aromatization that turns estrogen, which men make a small amount of estrogen, but the testosterone that they make gets converted into estrogen in the adipose tissue, in the fat cells.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have a little bit less body fat, you tend to do that a little bit less, and you tend to have a little bit more action of both testosterone and growth hormone, and it's kind of a sign that your insulin levels are good. Women tend to, probably about 15 to 12%. We've got some very lean women on doing the pretty strict zone diets. I know around like CrossFit headquarters that do quite well on it. They don't lose their menstrual cycle and stuff like that. So somewhere around there. And some things that happen when your body fat level is lower, you tend to have less oxidative stress, these things called free radicals. You tend to have less of that occurring. So you're aging at a little bit lower rate. If your body fat is lower, then you tend to have lower circulating insulin levels and blood sugar levels. And that also means that you're probably aging at a little bit lower rate. So it's a real good hedge against abnormal or accelerated aging. But there's definitely a break-even point there. If you go too low, then you start getting a chronic stressor on the body, and you start getting a lot of cortisol released and stress on the immune system and things like that. So there's kind of a sweet spot for women, probably somewhere between 12 and 15. For mm-hmm. men, probably somewhere between 6 and 10.
You know, it's amazing. In so many ways, we learn that there really is this this incontrovertible connection between health, performance, and longevity.
Yeah.
There's almost no separating them, is there?
No, yeah. No, they're definitely yeah. not. Yeah. Definitely not.
Yeah,
the CrossFit Foundation's CrossFit Journal is just a work of genius, in my opinion. It really delineates that so well, the sickness, health, in kind of
right.
you know, parenthesis, and fitness, mm-hmm. and that it's the spectrum, and that if you are fit, you are further away from illness than you are if you're just
healthy. Well, yeah, yeah,
just well, yeah.
Okay, those of us that kind of follow the zone and all of the seemingly endless iterations of you know, the zone books that come out, which you know, which are all valuable in their own regard, but. The one that, you know, that has appeared recently was, the omega-3, fish oil version of the zone. So that obviously has brought some new information and some kind of an interesting twist, to the zone diet. And I want you to know, Rob, that several years ago, I had the opportunity of spending quite a bit of time with, Udo Erasmus. You're familiar with him. And his take is slightly different than Barry Sears on the if I remember this right, essential fatty acids, in that I think Udo's attitude was more of a balance omega-3 and 6s, whereas Barry Sears promotes a heavy omega-3s, light omega-6s. How do you sort all this out? I mean, I have the utmost respect for Udo, and he's no lightweight in the scientific community himself, so he obviously you know, had some foundation for his beliefs, but what's your take on omega-6s and how it fits into this?
They're both right. There does need to be a balance, but what Barry Sears is talking about, what Lauren Cordain is talking about, is a ratio of approximately 2-to-1 to 1-to-1 of omega-6s to omega-3s. And this is kind of reflecting on some reconstructed Paleolithic diets and contemporary hunter-gatherer diets. And also it seems to be the sweet spot that Barry Sears recommends for you know, like the omega zone. And it's basically that you've got just a little bit more omega-6s than omega-3s, and the omega-3s really coming from the fish oil sources, which provide EPA and DHA. These are the very long chain, super unsaturated essential fatty acids, which is a little different than Udo's approach, which is the shorter chain omega-3 fatty acids that the body needs to kind of grind away on and try to make these longer fatty acids. Udo's stuff is definitely very, very good. His methods and his recommendations are arrived largely from a kind of scientific peer review work, which got him a long ways down the road. But had he taken a little bit of a thought or a step about, okay, what foundationally could we build our nutrition from, and thinking about maybe a little bit of evolutionary biology, I think he would have refined his approach even further. But really, what they're recommending is very, very similar when it's all said and done.
So what does that do to the recommendations of fish oil versus flaxseed oil?
The flax oil, when you consume flax oil, you have to, the body converts it through a very long and very inefficient enzymatic process into the EPA and the DHA. And in the process of doing that, you upregulate some of the pro-inflammatory pathways that you're trying to suppress that omega-6s actually promote. So you're not getting that much of the real essential fatty acids that we need when you supplement with flax oil, and you're kind of running the risk of upregulating some of the inflammatory pathways that we're really trying to suppress. If you take the fish oils outright, then you avoid that whole conundrum just completely. So,
okay.
Lauren Cordain has done some preliminary work on this. I think he's fleshing this out, like, you know, literally as we speak, of a really kind of scientific proof that the consumption of just the flax oil version of the omega-3s will not provide adequate omega-3s for optimum health.
All right. Let's move on to the value of dairy products. Again, this seems to be a zone paleo difference, and in all of your research and studies and experience, what's your attitude about dairy?
Dairy's a dicey thing. Some people tolerate it better than others. Most people only associate with dairy the issue of lactose intolerance, which is one issue. Most people lose the ability to digest lactose as they age. Some populations retain the ability to digest it better than others, but that's one issue. There's another issue of this problem they call molecular mimicry, which is if you get an inflammatory process in the GI lining, the intestinal lining, it's possible for intact food particles to get into the body and to cross-react with proteins in the body, and then you can potentially get an immune response that involves some of your own body's proteins. And this is a theoretical mechanism of things like lupus and rheumatoid arthritis and a whole slew of autoimmune diseases. And dairy seems to have a lot of these characteristics. It has the things called lectins, which are typically plant-derived, but some animal proteins have them too, that cause a lot of GI irritation. And that's one issue. And then another issue is that dairy proteins cause a very pronounced insulin response. And again, this insulin response is something that we don't want a lot of because it upregulates the inflammatory pathways, it stores fat, and it does a whole slew of things that we don't want to have happen. It accelerates our aging and all this other stuff.
Right.
And so some people are more susceptible to the dairy than others. Also, when dairy is grain-fed versus grass-fed, it has much more of these immunological consequences. Cultures that eat grass-fed dairy versus grain-fed dairy tend to have a lot less problems.
Right.
But finding grass-fed dairy is a real challenge. Nobody makes it. It's expensive and low production. So it's...
So your basic recommendation, I think, if you were... if you were going to play it safe, would be to avoid dairy, right?
Usually what I just recommend is for folks to just try not eating it for a while and see how you feel. And virtually everybody that I've talked to who has done that, they say, yeah, I do notice I don't have the sniffles, I don't have the joint achiness, I maybe sleep a little better. there seems to be some anecdotal stuff going on with that. But then other people are just kind of like, oh, man, I don't notice any difference. And the things like cottage cheese and yogurt and stuff like that are so integral to them pulling off a better way of eating than what they were doing before, that it's a cost-benefit analysis that doesn't work for them to cut it out.
Right. Because the, protein sources, especially certain times of day, and convenient protein sources are oftentimes the issue that...
For sure.
Send people over the edge.
Yeah.
Any other recommendations that you have as far as supplementation? I know that paleo is really big on being able to derive all of your micronutrients from the food that you eat. That's obviously a noble goal, obviously something I think we would all agree on would be ideal. But given reality, do you ever recommend any supplementation of any kind?
Yeah, and some of the supplements are actually just things that we would normally get in grass-fed meat, like alpha-lipoic acid,
right,
which is a fat and water-soluble antioxidant, and it enhances insulin sensitivity and just does a whole bunch of interesting things. And then there's another product called conjugated linoleic acid, which seems to have some pretty potent anti-tumor activity and possibly might help with lean muscle mass gain and stuff like that. But these are things that are possible. You know, there's some good studies that maybe they're not going to turn you from a mediocre athlete into an Olympic champion, but they may be highly beneficial when taken for the long term. You know, they may have some long-term health benefits. And then there's this other thing out there that I've posted on it a lot on the message board and just almost get voted off the island each time I do it, but just a half a gram to a gram of creatine each day. It's super cheap. For some people, it really helps their performance, but it's got some really nifty effects on blood lipid levels. It prevents peroxidation of brain tissue, basically oxidative damage in brain tissue in particular. Really has some neat side effects, and it's just dirt cheap. And so just throwing down
that's always a plus, isn't it?
yeah, we should bathe in it. But, you know, those are maybe three biggies that I would say the first one is just, shoring up all the issues with nutrition as much as you can.
Right.
Adding some fish oil, and then if you want to try alpha-lipoic acid, conjugated linoleic acid, or some creatine, I think those are biggies. Art Devaney really likes a type of glutathione supplement. He's got a little information about that on his website, arthurdevaney.com. He swears by this stuff. I haven't had much personal experience with it, but it makes a lot of sense, so that might be an option as well.
Have you heard anything about any of the carnitine derivatives?
There's some really interesting things with like the N-acetyl carnitine.
Right.
There's so many supplements out there, and so many of them I think possibly work very, very well. You know, like this neuroprotective action that the N-acetyl L-carnitine seems to be doing.
Right.
It's a big one. Super pricey, but folks who are experiencing any type of kind of cognitive decline seems to work really, really well for them. If you poke around on Google, you can get some dosages, and Jarro Formulas is a great supplier for all of those products.
I could almost swear to the fact of acetyl L-carnitine as a mood enhancer.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's integral in three or four different neurotransmitter pathways: acetylcholine, dopamine, serotonin, norepinephrine. It's super important in all of those, and then it acts as a neurotransmitter itself. It's real important with all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, that appears to be good stuff. Any word about sports drinks? Anything you'd like to say about you know what I'm talking about, the Gatorade types.
Yeah, the Gatorade stuff. Really a quick ticket to insulin resistance. And there's some pretty – if you've got an event that's lasting longer than 2 hours, then you probably need to supplement with some sort of a glucose or a glucose polymer supplement. Of that bunch of stuff like Endurox or Cytomax, I think, are possibly the best out there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's pretty rare that folks need to supplement with them. And the thing that happens almost inevitably is that people mistake what you do in an athletic event with what they do in their day-to-day training.
Right.
And they start, you know, taking gainer drinks and stuff like that. And one of the functions of our body is, as far as glucose and insulin and all that stuff, we store glucose in our muscles. If we fill that up, then we start turning the glucose into fat. We start getting insulin resistant and whatnot. So part of the efficacy of exercise in a moderate carb diet like the Zone is that you're never topping off those carbohydrate stores. And so the gainer drinks can really launch you right over the top on that pretty quickly. And they tend to be very low quality as far as nutrient content and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So.
And I think it was a caller here tonight who touched on the subject of soy as a protein source, and you had a couple of things to say about that, but I'd like you to expand a little bit on your attitudes about soy as a protein source.
It tends to be relatively low quality compared to a lot of other protein sources, just as far as what they call net nitrogen retention, just like how much protein you're going to retain in your body, say like build muscle and whatnot. And so it's not super good just as far as a quality of protein. Soy also has these kind of dicey immunological issues. Again, it's somewhat similar to dairy, somewhat similar to cereal grains, in that it can cause a lot of GI irritation, which can lead to these autoimmune issues. And again, this is like some people get it, some people don't. If you're more stressed or, you know, having problems in your life, then maybe you're more susceptible. You know, these aren't 100% cut and dried things. These are just probabilities out there. But soy can be problematic from that perspective, and it also can have some real problems with thyroid function. Can really suppress the thyroid function. So
and there is, if I'm not mistaken, a male-female issue with soy also. Is that right?
The phytoestrogen.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Women, particularly if you're already insulin resistant and whatnot, have a problem with too much estrogen as it is. And then when you eat the soy, then you're getting additional phytoestrogens, which may exacerbate their problem. And so if they're having PMS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, uterine fibroids, a whole host of insulin-related and excess estrogen-related problems, the soy can exacerbate that. And then for men, if you're suppressing your testosterone levels, I forget the study, but they put a bunch of men on testosterone replacement and the guys just had a depression. And I think it was like a 98% improvement in, you know, mood and happiness and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's normal androgen levels, testosterone levels in men are super important for normal health. So, soy is a dicey, dicey item in my opinion. Yeah.
All right. Are you also of the camp that just basically says there's no really particular reason to eat grains?
Yeah, I mean they're super yummy. I can't deny that, but there's really not
a nutritional value there.
Yeah, nutritional value. There really is no comparison between cereal grains, legumes, and fruits, vegetables, you know, lean meat, that sort of stuff. And then there, so just nutritionally, there's really no comparison. If you have somebody eat a greater than about 55, 60% of their calories from grains, then they end up with all these metal ion, like calcium, zinc, magnesium deficiencies, and there's a whole slew of problems that come about from eating too many grains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can actually kill you off, and you see this in a lot of developing countries. And then beyond that, there's the autoimmune issues and insulin issues and stuff like that. If the Zone's approach is basically eating them in moderation, and I think that that's a pretty, if you use them as a condiment for the most part, then I think you're pretty good. Some people again have a greater problem with cereal grains than others, like folks who have a disease called celiac, a weedle, it'll kill them over time. So
wow.
For some people, it's just you can't eat it at all. And then for other people, it's it's maybe not a big deal, and there's definitely a dose response with them all.
And I'll bet there's some people out there that you know, can't eat grains and don't know they can't eat grains and are just dying slowly because of it.
Celiac is a massively underdiagnosed, underreported disease, and it's bad. It's pretty bad.
That kind of sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I was also pretty surprised in studying the paleo diet that how specific the paleo diet seems to be about things like specific kinds of nuts. You know, the zone casts a pretty wide net as far as nuts go. Paleo's much more specific. Peanuts are bad. That was pretty surprising. Cashews. I was surprised about that. Is that your thinking too? You think that
the peanuts land in the legume category,
yeah.
and they have what's called a really high atherogenic potential. Atherosclerosis is the whole hardening of the arteries thing, and part of that is a inflammatory cascade, and the type of lectins, the little sugar and protein particles that are found in peanuts and peanut oil, are really, really problematic from that perspective. So they're highly, highly atherogenic. Cashews, to my knowledge, are not a legume and much less problematic than peanuts. Some people,
I think, paleo categorizes them as something unique and distinctive altogether.
They are interesting in that the shell that they come in actually has a toxin in it virtually identical to poison oak and poison ivy, poison sumac, and whatnot. So shelling them is kind of a dicey issue. And some of the workers who you know, I've had to deal with that in the past, you know, have all kinds of like skin problems and whatnot from that toxin that's found in the shell. But cashews, I think, compared to peanuts, are just orders of magnitude more benign. I really personally wouldn't have any problem with cashews. It's again, you know, if somebody's eating them and they notice some problems, they don't feel as well, some GI irritation or something like that, then obviously swapping them out.
Right.
A really good way to address all this stuff is just eating in kind of cyclic patterns, trying to change up your eating with the seasons a little bit. Whatever's kind of seasonal. We're kind of lucky living in Chico. We are surrounded by they call them almonds around here, almond orchards, and so when those come in season, we eat a lot of those. When they go out of season, we kind of shift to like pecans and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if you can do that, that's a pretty good way to switch up the nutrients that you're getting and also the toxin load that you're getting. All plants and foods have their own endogenous toxins and whatnot, so that's a good way to switch all that up.
All right, good advice. I was particularly intrigued tonight by what you had to say about this intermittent fasting, and I'm wondering if you can steer all of us towards some web resources about intermittent fasting that would help it to get a really good handle on that.
Arthur Devaney's website, www.arthurdevaney.com, that's probably the first resource that I found talking about anything like this. So that's the first good place to start. If you just put intermittent fasting into Google, then you're probably going to run across research article. Intermittent fasting dissociates beneficial effects in neurotoxic something other, and that's a great paper. It really breaks down and does a contrast between intermittent fasting and caloric restriction, and the benefits and drawbacks of both, and it paints the intermittent fasting in a very favorable light as far as disease prevention and also some life extension. And I find it fairly easy to implement. I don't really get hungry. It makes it a little easier. I'm not so pressured trying to fit in as many meals and whatnot, and I haven't found a downslide in my performance. Quite the contrary, it seems to still be good, and that's while, you know, working a lot of hours, not sleeping as much as I would like, and stuff like that. So
how long have you been on that?
Probably about 3 months, pretty consistently. And just experimenting with it. And some days I do eat a little later. Some days I do eat breakfast earlier and whatnot. But most of the time, sticking to that probably, you know, 15-hour window of time of not eating, and it seems to be working pretty well. And again, I don't know if this is something that's going to work for the masses in any way at all. I have no idea, but I really like it, and I've been liking the results with my performance and whatnot.
Well, you know, I think the good news here is that we already know that there are some programs that have some excellent results.
Mm-hmm.
We can always recommend those to people that want to and can do that.
Right.
But again, having some options, you know, to accommodate different lifestyles, to accommodate different attitudes, that can be nothing but good as long as the results are consistent, predictable, and beneficial. So
yeah, totally.
Yeah. Anything else off the beaten track as far as web resources that you'd like to recommend to anybody?
Oh wow, I don't get around. I used to search around so much, but you know, it's mainly CrossFit.com, of course.
Yeah.
Arthur Devaney's website.
Yeah.
The PaleoDiet.com by Professor Lauren Cordain.
Right.
This is maybe a little bit of a sideline, but Straight Blast Gym International, SBGI, I think, the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu kickboxing folks, just right in line both with kind of paleo thinking, with CrossFit, community, free thinkers. I mean, Matt Thornton's the founder of Straight Blast Gym and a great guy, and just lots and lots of good resources on there. I love their stuff, and they're training and connected to a lot of very good mixed martial arts folks, and the MMA community is obviously really big and very important to CrossFit. So I love those guys and love what they're doing and what they're about.
And you mentioned earlier you have you got another performance menu coming out in about a week or so. Want to give us a little preview? What are you going to talk about there?
We have an interview with Coach Mike Bergner, world famous Olympic lifting coach, and just a fantastic interview with him, and a mountain of recipes. The past couple of issues we've had just pretty almost corpulent obese issues, and we kind of cut down the number of recipes, and so this one we cut out some other material, and we're going to have a mountain of recipes and really focusing on snacks and summertime eating, trying to get some quick easy foods, which is admittedly really hard with you know, kind of paleo foods. I remember a Mad Magazine takeoff of Conan the Barbarian, and they had lizard on a stick, and I wish we could do that. I remember seeing that in Thailand, and that would really simplify things a lot for us, I think. But we're going to try to tackle the problems of snacks and a few desserts and some summertime food.
It's been great having you. We're gonna let you go for the night. And
Dave, thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so you will, you're forever immortalized now in the CrossFit Live archives, and you're doing great work, and it's just, it's just a pleasure to have you. Thanks so much, and I hope you'll come back and visit with us again sometime soon. Will you do that?
We're planning a trip up there in July, actually, so we'll foist ourselves upon you, I promise.
Wonderful. I'll look forward to seeing you.
Dave, take care, and thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good evening, and thanks again for joining us.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. This is Dave Young. Thank you for listening to this archived edition of CrossFit Live. You've been listening to the program from June the 5th, 2005, featuring Coach Rob Wolf. If you have comments, suggestions, or music you'd like to contribute to CrossFit Live, please address those to host@CrossFitLive.com. That's host@CrossFitLive.com. I thank you for all of your participation in every form. For current information on CrossFit Live and the status of upcoming shows, please visit www.crossfitlive.com. We'll see you next time on another edition of CrossFit Live.